You're probably used to seeing the headlines by now. A new AI model drops. The press release claims it's dominating every standardized test.
Right, and the charts show it's scoring near perfect on like reasoning, logic, coding.
Exactly. But what actually happens when a developer takes that supposed genius AI, ignores all the sterile laboratory tests,
Yeah.
and just, hands it a messy, chaotic million-dollar business problem?
Well, the results completely shatter the illusion of those leaderboards. I mean, we are seeing this massive, almost invisible gap between how AI models score on paper and how they actually perform in the unforgiving trenches of real-world product development.
Yeah, and welcome to today's deep dive. We've got our hands on this fascinating field note from a developer dated March 5, 2026. It's titled GPT 5.4 versus Opus 4.6: Why Benchmarks Stopped Mattering.
It's such a great read.
It really is. And, our mission today isn't just to rattle off tech specs. We're looking at an exact head-to-head showdown between two of the most advanced models on the planet to see what actually makes an AI genuinely useful to you when the training wheels come off.
Right, because to understand why the official scorecards might be leading the entire industry astray, we really have to look at the incredibly unscientific, real-world test this developer designed.
Yeah, the source here isn't some theoretical researcher in a lab coat running controlled experiments.
No, this is a practitioner who notes they've burned through over 3 billion tokens across various models in just a single year.
Which is an absolute mountain of usage. Just to put that in perspective, that means they are relying heavily on agentic coding tools.
Specifically, Claude Code and Codex.
Exactly, for like 95% of their production code.
Yeah.
And when we say agentic tools, we mean systems where the AI isn't just generating text, but it's actively exploring file systems, running code, seeing errors, and trying again.
Yeah, they are building things all day, every day. They actually describe themselves as a does this actually work kind of person.
Right.
And they hit this massive crossroads with an app they're building called Mio, which is an AI companion product.
And the dilemma was, should Mio keep its persona role play system? Meaning, like, the AI has a fictional backstory, a fake job, a daily routine, or should they pivot to a more generic, straightforward AI assistant model?
Right, which isn't just a simple coding bug, it's a multi-dimensional business problem.
Oh, absolutely. If you want to answer this correctly, you need market research, competitive analysis, you need a deep understanding of human psychology.
Plus product design and engineering feasibility.
Yeah. So to test the newly launched GPT 5.4 against Otis 4.6, our developer doesn't write some highly sanitized, perfectly optimized prompt.
No, they just brain dump. They type the exact same long, messy, mixed Chinese and English prompt into both models.
Wow, mixed languages too.
Yeah, there was no careful formatting, no polite instructions asking the model to structure its response as a neat bulleted list or anything. It was just raw developer thinking out loud chaos.
Wait, but if you are testing the frontier of machine intelligence, why wouldn't you give it a perfectly structured prompt? I mean, dropping a disorganized brain dump on an AI is like handing a shoebox full of crumpled receipts and sticky notes to an accountant. Why is that actually a better test of how smart the model is?
Because real-world problems do not arrive in perfectly formatted, machine-readable structures.
Fair point.
If you have to spend 2 hours meticulously formatting your question using specific syntax just so the AI can understand it, you are the one doing the cognitive heavy lifting.
Ah.
The true test of intelligence, whether human or artificial, is the ability to parse intent from chaos. The smartest system is the one that can look at that overflowing shoebox, identify the conflicting signals, and synthesize them into a cohesive strategy without needing to be spoon-fed.
That makes total sense. So both models have full access to the Neo code base. They're running on their default settings. Same prompt, same context, different digital brains. Let's look at what they actually sent back.
Starting with GPT 5.4, running through the Codex environment.
Right. What did the reigning benchmark champion actually produce?
Well, it produced a highly defensible, competent response. It demonstrated great codebase awareness.
Like it knew the specific files.
Exactly. For instance, it cited specific files in the developer system, pointing directly to line 25 in a product documentation file docs/productlacity.md, and it referenced a specific onboarding TypeScript file.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it mapped the developer's messy thoughts directly to the architecture of the app.
And it nailed the high-level conclusion, too,
Yep.
right? It suggested moving away from the real-person role-play. It even gave this great one-liner for the new product definition, calling it not a real person who exists somewhere, but an AI that that explicitly exist for you.
It's a great line.
I mean, that is a really strong conceptual framing.
The framing is excellent. It even offered a decent conceptual shorthand summarizing the goal as low human realism plus high emotional specificity.
Nice.
But digging into the actual format and utility of the output, it was overwhelmingly prose heavy.
Just walls of text.
Yeah, long paragraphs. And it hedged its bets frequently, saying things like, the one uncertainty I'd preserve is.
Well, let me push back on that, though. GPT 5.4 read the code base. It gave safe, solid advice, and it answered the question the developer asked. If it successfully parsed the prompt and gave a correct answer, shouldn't that be considered a massive win for the model?
In a vacuum, perhaps.
Yeah.
But we are talking about frontier tech being used to make high-stakes product decisions. GPT 5.4 acted like a highly competent intern.
An intern?
Yeah, think about it. You ask an intern a question, and they give you a safe, consultant-style first-pass opinion based strictly on what you asked. They don't rock the boat.
Ah, right. They just do the assignment.
Exactly. It only cited about 10 sources, and the market research was incredibly light. The developer even notes that if Opus hadn't existed, they would have been perfectly happy with GPT's output and moved forward.
But not failing the prompt isn't the same as driving innovation.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's look at Opus 4.6, running through the Claude code environment. What does it look like when a model doesn't just act like an intern, but actively drives the project forward?
Opus took a radically different, highly structured approach. It didn't just answer the question, it actively conducted unprompted research.
Unprompted.
Yeah. It went out and brought back concrete market data. Instead of just theorizing that persona apps tend to retain users better, it created actual formatted comparison tables.
Wait, actual tables with numbers?
Real numbers. It showed that persona-driven apps like Character.ai get 50 to 60% day one retention and up to 2.7 hours of daily usage.
That's huge.
And it contrasted that with generic AI assistants, which get maybe 5% retention and are used for mere minutes.
Oh, wow. And it even did competitive analysis without being asked. It identified InflectionsPy.ai as the exact precedent for a generic no-persona companion.
Yes, and it didn't just list the app, it used it as a cautionary tale.
Right, Opus pointed out that Pi had 75% more positive reviews than ChatGPT for conversational quality, yet it still failed as a standalone product, and the team was absorbed by Microsoft.
That is a critical connection to make. Opus warned the developer that if they strip the personas completely, they are essentially building Pi.ai.
Ouch.
Yeah. The market has already demonstrated that warmth alone, without a compelling hook, just isn't enough to survive.
And then it brings in actual psychology. It outlined a 5-factor academic framework for emotional attachment to AI, listing things like perceived emotional responsiveness and self-disclosure reciprocity.
Which is the idea that users only open up emotionally if they feel the AI is opening up to them.
Right. But the absolute aha moment, the thing the developer said was the most valuable part of the entire output, was how Opus completely reframed the core problem.
This part is brilliant. Opus realized the developer was trapped in a binary mindset, the idea that either we have a persona or we don't.
Yeah.
So it separated the problem into two distinct orthogonal axes. On one axis, you have personality, the warmth, the communication style, the emotional patterns of the AI.
Okay.
On the other axis, you have the physical world identity, the fiction that the AI lives in a specific city, wakes up at 9 a.m. and takes the subway.
So it basically told the developer, you must keep the personality, but you can drop the physical world identity. You don't need a fake backstory for the user to feel an emotional connection.
Exactly. That changes the entire paradigm from should we drop personas to which parts of the persona create attachment and which parts just feel weird and uncanny.
That is such a massive shift in perspective.
It decomposed the problem beautifully, and it followed through with highly actionable next steps. It provided UI layouts, it suggested a specific color scheme of black, white, and dark gray, and proposed an emotion-to-orb visual mapping system.
It even laid out a version roadmap from V0 to V2.
Right. It even pulled specific China market data, citing a local Xingye app with 4.46 million monthly active users, backing everything up with over 15 URLs.
See, that is the difference between an intern and a co-founder. A co-founder doesn't just answer the question you ask, they challenge the underlying premise of your question entirely.
Exactly. Opus brought research initiative, finding data unprompted, and structural rigor, organizing chaos into tables and frameworks.
And it actually changed how the developer thought about their own product, while GPT just confirmed their existing biases in polite prose.
Yeah, it really did.
Which brings us to the elephant in the room. If Opus 4.6 completely blew GPT 5.4 out of the water in a practical, high-stakes scenario, how did GPT 5.4 end up dominating all the official leaderboards? Because on launch day, the headlines were all about GPT 5.4 winning the AI race.
Well, if we look at the official scorecard from the developer's notes, GPT 5.4 launched with incredibly impressive numbers. It won 5 out of 8 key categories. It scored 94.4% on GPQA Diamond, which is a benchmark specifically designed to test advanced reasoning by throwing PhD-level questions at the model.
Wow, 94% on PhD questions.
Yeah, it scored 83% on GDPVAL for knowledge work. Opus only won 3 categories, like SW Bench for software engineering, where it got 80.8%, and Gemini 3.1 Pro won 4.
So objectively, on paper, GPT 5.4 is the undisputed benchmark leader.
On paper, yes. But the system measuring that leadership is fundamentally broken. Our source outlines exactly why these scorecards are lying to us.
Let's get into that.
First, there's just basic saturation. We hear all these acronyms models scoring over 88% on tests like MMLU, which is a massive multiple choice test covering everything from high school physics to professional law.
Or scoring 99% on GSMAK, which tests grade school math.
Great. The problem is, when every frontier model is getting an A+ on these tests, the test loses all utility. It can no longer distinguish between a good model and a great one.
That makes sense.
And the reason everybody is getting an A+ isn't necessarily because the models possess true reasoning. It leads directly to the second massive issue, contamination.
Contamination, which is basically the polite academic word for cheating, right? Mm-hmm. Because these models are trained on the entire internet, and the test questions are often posted on the internet.
Precisely. Independent analysis showed that for SWE Bentria, that major coding benchmark, Opus supposedly won roughly 1/3 of the tests have the actual answers written right there in the open source issue reports or developer comments that the models were trained on.
Are you kidding me? 1/3.
1/3. Furthermore, another 1/3 of those tests don't even have sufficient testing protocols to catch if the AI makes a subtle error.
So a significant portion of the time, the benchmark is effectively an open book test where the AI has already memorized the answer key during its training phase.
Exactly. No wonder they score so high. But then you see this massive gap between the evaluation environments and production environments.
Right. The developer notes research from Stanford and Confident AI showing a really disturbing trend. Models that score in the low 90s during sterile controlled evaluations routinely drop to the high 60s when actually deployed in real products.
And for coding, it's even worse. Accuracy on synthetic coding benchmarks collapses to single digits when the models are applied to real-world, messy code bases.
Single digits.
Yeah. The controlled tests do not reflect the chaotic dependencies of an actual software product.
We've actually seen this play out publicly with the false king phenomenon, haven't we? Like in November 2025, Google's Gemini 3 Pro was crowned the benchmark leader. The headlines went absolutely wild.
Oh, I remember.
Yet, within 2 months, practitioners deemed it largely irrelevant for actual frontier coding work.
Mm.
The model that won on paper completely lost in practice.
It's wild. Even the mechanism we use to grade these models is structurally flawed. The industry frequently relies on a method called LLM as judge, where you use one AI to grade the outputs of another AI.
Okay.
But the developer's notes highlight a severe mechanical issue with that. Position bias.
Oh, explain how position bias actually works in this context, because the stats on this are just wild.
So language models have an inherent attention bias toward certain parts of their context window, often favoring the first or last piece of text they read.
Okay.
If an AI judge is presented with answer A and answer B, and you simply swap their positions, presenting answer B first instead of answer A, the AI judge will change its preference 40% of the time.
Wait, 40%? Just from changing the order?
Yes. It isn't actually judging the underlying logic or reasoning. It is just getting distracted by the formatting and the order of the text. It's essentially a coin flip masquerading as empirical science.
That is unbelievable. Wait, so obsessing over these benchmarks, is that essentially like testing a car engine on a sterile dyno machine in a laboratory? Like, sure, the engine puts out 1,000 horsepower in a perfect vacuum, but real-world usage is dropping that engine into a heavy chassis and forcing it to navigate through gridlock rush hour traffic in the pouring rain.
That is the perfect way to visualize it.
Are we obsessing over the raw horsepower of the bare model while completely ignoring the vehicle, the tools, and the framework that actually gets the work done?
Yes. That is what the developer calls the deepest issue of all, the agentic harness problem. benchmark tables simply cannot capture the system surrounding the model.
Right.
You don't just use a raw model, you use a system. When you log into ChatGPT or Claude on your browser, you aren't just talking to the raw neural network weights. You are interacting with a harness that has web search capabilities, Python interpreters, and memory functions.
So in this developer's experiment, Opus wasn't acting alone. It was inside a harness called Claude Code, which gave it the ability to search the web, access file systems, execute tools in parallel.
Exactly. And GPT was inside Codex, which is a harness heavily optimized for pure isolated code execution. Benchmarks test naked, isolated models predicting the next word. But practitioners use integrated systems that can recognize an error, search for a solution, and try again.
That makes total sense.
What practitioners care about isn't a 94.4% reasoning score on a trivia test. They care about thought partnership, a slightly weaker statistical model that is wrapped in a superior harness, one that actively searches the web, pulls context, and structures its output, will outperform a statistically smarter, naked model every single time.
So it's not Opus versus GPT. It's the Opus system versus the GPT system.
Precisely.
Which brings us right back to you listening to this. The next time you're using an AI to help you tackle a hard, messy problem, whether you're planning a major career pivot, designing a complex project, or figuring out a business strategy, don't just settle for the AI that gives you a polite, prose-heavy confirmation of what you already think.
Now, look for the system that brings those two critical elements to the table: research initiative and structural rigor.
Yes.
You want an AI harness that goes out and finds data you didn't even know you needed and then organizes it in a way that clarifies your decision-making. Don't trust the leaderboards to tell you which tool is best for your specific chaos. Run your own unformatted, messy test.
Because the gap between a smart intern and a brilliant co-founder is exactly the gap between an AI that safely answers your question and an AI that changes the way you see the problem entirely.
It really is. And it does leave us with a rather profound dilemma to consider.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if current AI benchmarks are essentially just open book tests where the models have already memorized the answer key during their training phase, how will we actually measure intelligence moving forward?
Wow, that is the million-dollar question, isn't it? When we finally ask these models to solve completely novel problems, things like curing a new disease, engineering next-generation materials, or navigating global supply chain crises problems with no historical data to train on, we won't have a standardized test for that.
Exactly.
We'll be back to the messy, unstructured real world. No multiple choice bubbles in sight.
It's definitely a sobering thought for the next time you find yourself staring at a blank prompt box, wondering just how smart the machine on the other side really is.
It really is. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time.